Welcome to the Kitchen Counter Podcast, episode 49. Help, I don't know what to cook. Hey everybody, thank you so much for downloading and listening to this episode of the show. I'm Roger, your host, and today we're going to be talking about how to go about finding inspiration in the kitchen. Before we jump right into that, I just want to mention a couple of things. As usual, of course, you can always send me emails at feedback@kitchencounterpodcast.com, or you can find me on Facebook at facebook.com/kitchencounterpodcast or Twitter at TKCpodcast. And I want to let you know in the next episode I'm going to be talking about braising. Braising is probably my favorite method of cooking anything, so I'm really excited to do a deep dive into the world of braising. I want to know if you have any questions about braising or recipes or anything related to that cooking technique. If you send me an email before the show, I'll do my best to get them on the show and address those. So that's going to be coming up next time. All right, so let's jump right into the topic today. Again, I'm calling this episode Help, I Don't Know What to Cook, or otherwise known as Finding Inspiration in the Kitchen. All right, so, you know, we know it's tough to get in the kitchen and cook, especially if you work a full-time job or have other things going on in your life. And not only is time often an issue, but there's other reasons we don't get into the kitchen as much as we like. And one thing I've heard time and again from folks since I started the show is something along the lines of help, I don't know what to cook. I'm paraphrasing there, and note that is different than I don't know how to cook, although that can be tricky as well to figure out what you should be cooking if you don't have much experience in making food. So the two kind of go hand in hand, but I've been hearing a lot lately that people are just out of ideas or they don't know how to branch out from their routine. And they're just not sure what to do. So I want to tackle this at a little bit more, you know, fundamental level almost. I don't want to talk about just going to the internet to a certain website and finding ideas for dinner. I don't want to go that shallow, although that's obviously not a bad idea. I want to talk about it at a little more base level and really hit it at the inspirational level. So I have three ways to find inspiration in the kitchen. And I think I've thought about this a long time, and I think there are no other ways besides these three ways. That sounds like a pretty grand statement, but I think it'll make sense when I start to go through it. But I just also want to make a quick note before I get to those three ways to find inspiration. I want to just briefly talk about where I don't think you should go to find inspiration. And I've mentioned this on other shows, but I think it's a bad idea in general to use as your source of inspiration to cook at home what other people tell you to cook. Now, that can be the latest, you know, food craze. It could be that internet diet guru that tells you you can only eat quinoa and bananas. It can be whatever the latest hot series of shows is on the Food Channel. You know, so the bottom line is if you're not going to be inspired, if you're doing something that you don't buy into at the very outset. So if you're, you know, tackling a menu plan that's completely fabricated from, you know, a website that says you should never eat dairy or nuts and you love dairy and nuts, you know, you're not going to get in the kitchen and cook very much. And even if you do, it's not going to last. So that's just not the way to find inspiration, in my opinion. And my three items here, these aren't really specific to a certain type of cuisine or certain ingredients or even a certain lifestyle. So within these three categories, you can find ways to adapt menus to your lifestyle. So if you can't eat dairy, for example, you can certainly find menus in all of these categories, you know, to accommodate that. Or if you're gluten intolerant, you can certainly, or if you're vegan even, you can certainly find ways in all of these categories to make food that you're going to love and be inspired by. Now, let's talk about those three categories. So what I mean, and these are very broad categories. These are, again, kind of inspirational level categories. And there's three. And I call them cook what you love, cook where you live, and cook who you are. So let me talk about each one of those a little bit. And we'll start with cooking what you love. Now, this one's pretty straightforward. But to me, it's surprising how many people never even attempt to cook the foods that they really love. You know, we have these favorite foods, these favorite cuisines, and because we love them so much and they're so delicious and they're so complex and they're so wonderful and they're such an experience, you know, when we go to a restaurant to eat them, they almost seem unattainable to somebody in a home kitchen. And in a very few cases, that might be true. But by and large, the reason that people think they're unattainable is because they've never tried it. So one really simple example, if you love pizza, you can go anywhere in the world at any time of the day or night and find a great slice of pizza. And you probably have, if you love pizza, your own favorite pizza place. But it's not that hard to make pizza at home, and it's a lot of fun. And if you have a family, it's a lot of fun to get the family involved, especially younger kids, in making homemade pizza. But a lot of people never even attempt to make homemade pizza. And I mean homemade from scratch, the dough, you know, everything from scratch. And of course, there are different stages. You can buy pre-made crust and all that kind of stuff. But the point is, you know, people just don't try that stuff at home. A personal story, I remember a long time ago, well, I love risotto. And if you've listened to my risotto episode, you know that. But for a long, long time, I just only had it at restaurants. I had it with like ossobuco, which is my favorite dish of all time. And I always thought risotto seemed just so complicated and so hard to get right that I never really even attempted it at home. And in fact, there was one point we were at the store, my wife and I, and we were in the rice aisle, or, you know, the pasta aisle or whatever aisle that is in the grocery store. And we spotted this box sitting on the shelf, and it was a Parmesan risotto. I thought, huh, I wonder if that's any good. So I bought it and I tried it, and it wasn't restaurant quality, but it was decent. You know, it was like a box of mac and cheese. And so we bought that a few times and had it. And as fate would have it, the store stopped carrying it. I was at the point where it was like, well, dang it, I'm going to have to figure out how to make this on my own. So I did. And it's the best thing I know how to make. And I like to make it. I don't make it a lot because it's a fairly rich dish. But now that I know how to make it at home, I can whip it up at a moment's notice. And that was something, you know, years and years ago, I thought wasn't really something I could do in the kitchen. That was just part of my personal cooking evolution. So the point is, again, cooking what you love, it's the most general, it's the most broad-based category, but it's really the category I think that people can get behind, because if you love it, you can find what you love to cook, cook it, make variations, be adventurous, start pushing the boundaries, and you're going to be into it because you love that food. Okay, now that's pretty obvious, I know, but you know, cooking what we love for our family and friends, it's just fun, okay? So find something you love and go deep. All right, let me talk about the second category. And that I mentioned is cooking where you live. Now, the world's culinary options are practically endless, right? And no matter where you live, there's probably some sort of regional cuisine available. And if you live in maybe a metropolitan area, there's probably many ethnic and cultural cuisines available to you. You know, here in the United States alone, there's tons and tons of regional cuisines. You know, if you live in Louisiana, you may want to get familiar with Cajun cookery if you're not already. If you live in the Bay Area of California, you know, fresh seafood, that's the way to go. Southwest Texas, you know, Tex-Mex. So just look around where you're at and you're going to find cuisines. And probably the case is if you live in an area like this, you go out and you eat this food and maybe you do this sort of cooking at home. But if you want to branch out, you know, especially with in the metropolitan areas, you know, most metropolitan cities have, you know, cultural enclaves where those echoes still ring loudly, and there's often very vibrant communities, ethnic communities, where you can find wonderful sources of inspiration for cooking. So, I mean, you know, there's countless Chinatowns and Little Italies and Germantowns and Mexican districts and African communities all over North America. And actually, in the show notes, if you go to kitchencounterpodcast.com/49, I've actually got a Wikipedia article link that is a list of ethnic enclaves in North American cities, and it's a huge, crazy long list, and I'm sure it's not even complete. And, you know, looking for inspiration in this arena is really fun because the research is fun. You know, you can go to these communities, you can go to these restaurants, you can go to these ethnic markets and, you know, find food that you're not even going to be familiar with, probably. If you've never spent time in an Asian foods market or in like a Mexican foods market, like an actual authentic cultural market in the United States, for example, you're going to find things that are going to blow your mind. And if you're even the slightest bit adventurous, you're going to have a lot of fun. And the great thing is the people are generally really willing and excited to help you understand, you know, how to use these ingredients, how to make these recipes and that sort of a thing. Now, one other aspect of cooking where you live is not necessarily culture-based or cuisine-based, although it's certainly going to tie in at a, kind of a basic level, but that is just using local products. That's always a really great way to go. You know, local products and produce that is available in your area informs the local and regional cuisines, right? So, you know, farmers markets, going to local farm stands, if that's something that's available to you, is a really good way to tap right into the basic level of what's available in your community. And I was talking with Seth Heasley of the Take Me to Your Reader podcast. We talk about the show quite a bit and cooking rather quite a bit. And he mentioned that he really likes belonging to his local CSA, and that stands for Community Supported Agriculture, because he gets a box of produce, I'm not sure how often, every week or whatever, and he doesn't know what's going to be in the box, and he gets something in the box, and he feels like, hey, I've got all this interesting produce, I'm going to figure out how to use it, and it inspires him to get in the kitchen and try different things. Just a quick note on what a CSA is, you know, they're I'm not sure how widespread they're available, they're quite abundant here in the Pacific Northwest, but it's basically a farm or a farm stand where you can buy into their produce by paying a certain amount of money per season or per year or however they define it. So you pay, you buy a share of that farm's produce, and then every week or every 2 weeks or whatever it is, you get a delivery of a box or a bag or whatever of different types of produce that that farm harvested. You know, so maybe 1 week you get a box of kale and beets and onions and, you know, whatever. And then the next week you get some squash, you get some carrots, you know, I don't know. But you get these different things every week in these CSA boxes. So it's kind of a really fun way to find inspiration locally. And I'll put a link in the show notes. I think there's a website out there that lists, you know, it's like a directory of CSAs around the country. All right. So cooking where you live. Even if you're not looking for inspiration, you know, a lightning bolt of inspiration, this is just a good idea anyway to find the local products and try to use them as much as possible. All right, let's get on to the last one. And this is cooking who you are. And this is a location independent, and it goes in a little bit different direction than, you know, cooking what you love. It probably combines elements from those first 2 points, hopefully. But this is my favorite source of inspiration when it comes to cooking. You know, each of us has a unique story to tell. We have a unique background. If we were lucky, you know, we grew up eating unique and delicious home-cooked foods that were, you know, dripping with meaning and connection and love and memory. And even if you didn't grow up eating a lot of home-cooked meals, you know, your own cultural and ethnic backgrounds can provide a source of culinary exploration, right? Just to give you a couple of examples from my own life, because they're just the easiest to talk about. So my mom's side of the family comes from a relatively small cultural group of people known as Germans from Russia. If that sounds weird, what that is around the turn of the 19th century, around the 1800s, Catherine the Great in Russia was trying to turn the Crimean region of Russia into a more agriculturally productive land. And they were also trying to displace some of the Tartars that were living there to try to you know, settle that countryside. Okay, she had a connection with the Germans because she was German. So she invited German farmers to come and set up settlements in the Crimean region of Russia, which they did, and which my ancestors from my mother's side did. Now, there's a whole cuisine that these people make that's kind of unique, but it takes, you know, major elements from German cooking, a little bit from Russian cooking, and as I understand it, even a little bit of the Tartar influence in their cooking. So I love exploring these dishes because a lot of these my mom or my grandma made, you know, when we were growing up, as kids. But I love it because they're nothing you find anywhere in the restaurants. Even if you go to a German restaurant, you can find some variations of these. But I love exploring, you know, these types of recipes. And some are familiar and simple, like nudla, which are egg noodles. There's something called halupsi, which are cabbage rolls, you know, wrapped around a beef and a sausage mixture and braised in a tomato broth. Kuchen, which is like a custard pie dessert. casa netfla, cheese buttons, ram noodles, cream noodles. I could go on and on, but there's a lot of these dishes that I want to get into and try to master, and I dabble in, but it provides tons and tons of inspiration to me, because not only is it interesting, delicious food, you know, I have a connection, a life connection to this cuisine. You know, one more example, my son, I mentioned a couple episodes ago, is Ethiopian. So my wife and I have done some experimenting with traditional Ethiopian cuisine, but oh my gosh, it's a different world entirely from what I'm used to cooking. So there's a lot to learn, and I've got a long way to go. You know, using spices like Berberi, or making injera, their traditional bread, stews like Dora Wat, chickpea paste like shiro, you know, etc. So there's all these interesting dishes, and it's delicious food. And I'm motivated to learn because I want my son to have that connection to his heritage and his homeland, you know, so that one day when he's older, he'll hopefully appreciate it just a little bit more. And I really plan on spending some more time in Portland, you know, going to some Ethiopian markets and restaurants and really trying to understand, you know, the cuisine, not just from a recipe list and a three or four steps on how to make something, but a little deeper, you know, from the cultural level, so I can put that into the food when I cook it. Okay, so those are just a couple personal examples of cooking who you are. I think you get the idea. And I bet if you stop to think about it, if there aren't really obvious ideas from a cultural perspective, from an ethnic perspective, on connections that you can make to your heritage, you could probably find some real easy if you just sit down and brainstormed. So just to summarize what we just talked about. So my three methods of finding inspiration in the kitchen is cooking what you love, cooking where you live, and cooking who you are. Again, if you head over to the kitchencounterpodcast.com/49, I'll have the show notes for this episode where you can read a summary of all those and find the links I mentioned. So I hope you found that somewhat inspirational. I hope you have an idea on where to go now to figure out a new path or a new direction to explore with your friends and your family in your home kitchen. Well, I hope you enjoyed that episode. It was kind of a lot of fun sitting down and formulating these thoughts I've had in the back of my mind for a long time about how to get inspired in the kitchen. Once again, if you'd like to send me an email, you can do so at feedback@kitchencounterpodcast.com. You can find me on Facebook at facebook.com/kitchencounterpodcast or Twitter at @TKCpodcast. If you like what you heard today, please feel free to tell your friends about it. Or if you'd like, you can even head over to iTunes or Stitcher or Player FM or TuneIn or wherever you consume quality podcasts and leave a rating and review for the show. I would really appreciate that. All right, folks, thanks again for listening. And until next time, I'm Roger with the Kitchen Counter Podcast. Happy cooking.